government. And colleagues today, legislative fiscal office represented by Monica Brown, and our legislative assistant is Karen Segrist. We are scheduled on Senate Bill 5519, the Employee Relations Board, to have a budget work session, but we'll open this. Let's see, we do have Senator. Well, let's open this as a, even though the full committee is here, we'll open this as a public hearing. And I think we can do that even though we're scheduled for work session, because I would like to have an opportunity to go ahead and invite the agency to come forward on some of the concerns that we've got as we continue to balance and work through the Employee Relations Board. So with that, what I think we will do is we'll give Monica Brown an opportunity to go ahead and present Legislative Fiscal Office presentation. Colleagues, you should have pages 1 through 4. The original did not have the budget notes, and it was 1 of 3. Now you should have 1 through 4 pages on the Employment Relations Board for today's session. So with that, Monica, would you just go ahead and explain to us your... I think we can do this in a non-work session format. However, with everyone here, why don't I just go ahead and do this? Let me just go ahead and regavel a work session for Senate Bill 5519, Employee Relations Board, and we'll start with Legislative Fiscal Office's recommendation.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, since it's been a couple of weeks, let me give you a brief overview of the agency first. The governor's balanced budget for this agency is approximately $3 million total funds. That's about a 2.1% increase over the 0103 adopted. Governor's budget has 14 FTE. That includes the 3 board members as well as some professional support staff. The board will have a new chair subject to Senate confirmation on June 1. And the agency's budget is divided into 2 programs, a state program and a local program. The state program is funded through an assessment on state agencies. The local program funded by general fund and fees for services. Essentially, both program areas provide for mediation of collective bargaining disputes, contested case hearings, and resolution of questions on union representation. They also provide some mediation for unfair labor practice complaints and grievances and some training. In March, when they were here for public hearing, they presented the 7 performance measures that you see before you on page 1. These have been reviewed by the Progress Board, and LFO is recommending approval of those. Also in March, you reviewed the list of the agency vacancies. At that time, they had 3 vacancies, 2 of which were eliminated in the governor's budget. You'll see here the mediator and 1 office specialist 2. The 3rd position was the office manager. And since that time, since public hearing, that position has been filled with an internal candidate, thus creating this 4th vacancy that you're seeing here that is currently... on page 2 is the start of LFO's recommendations to modify the governor's budget. Items A through D are the standard adjustments that you're going to see in agencies. It's eliminating the inflation. It's eliminating the merit increases. It's taking action on the Attorney General rates and the DAS assessments for actions taken by the General Government Subcommittee earlier. And then starting on item E, getting into policy packages. Policy package 090 in the governor's budget eliminated the 1 vacancy office specialist, as well as shifted some of the savings from that vacancy to services and supplies to allow for contracting out of transcription services. At the time during public hearing, the committee had questions on why the agency was paying for transcripts rather than charging it to the appealing parties. LFO contacted Legislative Council for their opinion and review of that, and in general, Leg Council agrees with the agency's interpretation that they are required to provide the transcript when it is appealed. Obviously, that could be changed in statute if you want, but that's current law. The package further reduced facilities rents, employee training, office expenses, and data processing. LFO is recommending a modification to that package to shift some of the limitation to the local government program. In talking with the agency, the transcripts are frequently for unfair labor practice cases for which a filing fee is in place. Therefore, those fees could cover parts of the transcription services. In some cases, the transcripts are for state personal labor relations cases, so we have left $8,000 in limitation in that package in the state government program as well.
Is that policy option 090?
Yes, it is. Okay. Line item E. Line item F and G, I'm going to address these packages together. Within the governor's budget, one position was eliminated to reflect the roll-up of the Special Session 5 reduction to a biennial rate, and that necessitated an elimination of one position. The governor's office was in support of adding that position back to deal with anticipated caseload. It is my understanding in talking with the budget and management analyst that an incorrect position was eliminated. They had really intended to eliminate a hearings officer, but the package actually eliminated a principal executive manager F. So legislative fiscal is recommending denial of both of those packages in block. So it essentially eliminates that, and we will address that policy discussion in item H. The recommendation here in line item H actually eliminates the hearings officer position that was intended to be eliminated. That reduction reduces expenditures in the budgets that will allow the state government assessment to agencies to remain at the $1.35 per position per month that is current in 0103. And item I is the vacancy reduction. We were asked to review all long-term vacancies. As mentioned from the previous page, the office manager position had been the long-term vacancy. With the internal promotion, it created another vacancy of the receptionist paralegal position. That is the position that has been eliminated here. In review, LFO did not believe it met the add-back criteria established by the co-chairs. And additionally, in reviewing the agency's other fund revenue source, LFO is not in agreement with the projected revenues that are in the governor's budget. Governor's budget relied on a 25% increase in revenue that LFO just does not believe will come through based on 21 months of actuals in this biennium. They may get maybe a 4% increase in revenue. A technical note on that line item I, there's two office specialist positions in the agency. The vacant one did not have the required funding source on it, so there's going to have to do a fund shift on the office specialist to get to the right one to get to this funding split, but it's essentially eliminating the office specialist to meet their cash flow requirements. On page three,
that's all local government, that office manager three special.
Yes.
Okay.
Within page three, it's the review of the other funds, any cash balances. Within the state government labor relations, again, LFO recommending leaving the monthly assessment at the $1.35. And with the LFO recommendations to service or expenditure reductions, that would leave them with 4 to 5 months of operating cash. Within the local government program, as I mentioned, in reviewing 21 months of actuals through this biennium, and looking at the history of the other funds' fees in this area, I don't believe that the revenues can be sustained at the levels that are proposed in the governor's budget. The 25% increase seems unrealistic based on the actuals that are there. So LFO has recommended a modification to that, which then necessitated some of the service reductions that are over here. With LFO's recommendation, that leaves them with an equivalent of 2 months of operating expenditures. LFO would note that this agency has gone through significant program reductions over the last decade. Essentially, they have dropped their positions in half from 24 down to 12 over the last 10 or 12 years. And during public hearing, there was some discussion about the percentage of cases that were coming into the agency that were from the state versus locals and school districts. And some concerns over how much the state assessment was covering of the agency's total budget. This budget note is directing or asking the agency to work with DAS and Legislative Fiscal Office to review those funding mechanisms and to assure that the assessment is only covering the state program portion, and further asking that DAS go through and do a personnel review to make sure that their overall structure is appropriate for their administrative positions as well as agency oversight. Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Johnson.
On that point, and I apologize for having to poke my head out for just a second, in looking at a 14-person agency, the number of management positions that they have, does this contemplate the board?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, the 14 positions include the three board members, one of the chair, two board members, and then there are managers over the conciliation as well as the administrative law.
Thank you. That okay. Thanks.
Okay, you've heard the presentation, and I understand that there's some angst from the department with regard to their potential budget. So, Monica, let's see. Who do we want to have respond to that? I know we've got Margaret Allen there. Yes.
And Chair David Stitler is here as well.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Why don't we start with Mr. Stitler, and then we'll go from there. David, would you like to come forward? And
Chair Butler, members of the city, if it's possible, I'd also like to bring up Board Member Rita Thomas, because she will be replacing me as the chair effective June 1st, and just as a point of correction, not really relevant, the designation of the chair is something that does not require Senate confirmation. So my understanding is that effective June 1st, this burden will be Member Thomas's, and she'll have the joy of dealing with these kinds of things. I'm not exactly sure what it is that the committee would had questions about, but one of the things that I know that came up as an issue in the public hearing, and it's something that I'd like to go over again and address, is the balance between the assessment funding and other funding for the agency. And if you'll indulge me for a minute, the easiest way to try and explain that is to give you a little bit of history about how the agency's budget was created in the first place. In 1973 is when the agency in its current format was created. Prior to 1973, there was a civil service board that administered what was the precursor of today's state personnel relations law, civil service law for state employees. And that board was funded entirely, at least as far as I can determine, entirely by the assessment on state agencies and state employees. In 1973, when the legislature adopted and the governor signed the Public Employee Collective Bargaining Act, a determination was made that since they already had one board, there was no need to sort of recreate the wheel and create another board to administer another personnel law. So what they decided to do was put the jurisdiction over the Public Employee Bargaining Act with this civil service board. And they already had funding for a portion of that, but then they had to determine how much additional work was going to be created by this bargaining law, how many more employees they were going to need to administer this bargaining law, and then how they were going to pay for it. And in 1973, the decision was made that what they were going to do, they figured out about how many extra employees it was going to take to administer that law, or they made a guess, and they decided to pay for those services by general funds. There was never, at that time, any kind of detailed, or not even detailed, there was never any kind of assessment made, judgment made, that state work for state agencies is going to occupy 30% of the agency's budget time, and the work for everybody else is going to occupy 70% of the agency's time. So there was never any management decision made, either by the legislature or by the agency, that this is an appropriate kind of funding split, because the assessment will be funding which is going to make up about 30% of the budget, is going to be covering about 30% of the work. Over the years, that relative split between the state assessment and the general funds remained at about 30% for the assessment, 70% for general fund, and there was never, at least again, as far as I can determine from looking at the historical records available, there's never been any kind of study, there was never any kind of indication, never any discussion in legislative hearings about whether or not that funding split was appropriate. In other words, whether or not the state assessment was in fact funding 30% worth of the work, or whether or not it was more or less, whether the general fund was funding more or less of the agency's work. And this probably would never have become much of an issue, except that in the mid-90s, there started to be increasing pressure on general funds. And actually, earlier in the 90s, the agency started losing general funds. And in point of fact, what has happened over the years is that the assessment has been used with both, I guess, express and tacit approval of the Department of Administrative Services and the legislature. The assessment has been used to sort of backfill for general funds that have been reduced out of the agency's budget, so that when the agency's budget, a certain percentage of money in 91-93 was general fund money was reduced, there were adjustments made, and the agency has dealt with some of these funding reductions in general funds, as Ms. Brown indicated, by reducing staff. I mean, when in 1973 or 1977, the late 70s, there were 33 or 34 employees at the agency. When I went to work there as an administrative law judge in 1992, there were 24 people. Now we're going down to 12, 13, or 14. I'm not exactly sure what this budget, where this budget leaves us, but that's been one way that it's been dealt with. But there's never been any kind of a systematic effort to look at the appropriate balance, and whether or not the balance that exists between what the assessment funds and what percentage of the agency's work is in fact performed for state agencies. So it's something that has existed at least as near as I can determine from reviewing historical records. The problem that you're seeing today has existed in one form or another since 1973. It's not a new problem. It has existed since the agency was put into its current form, because no detailed study or analysis was ever made in 1973 when the agency was created in its current form to determine what the appropriate percentages would be. And that is why we are where we are, and to the degree that the committee is concerned that there is some backfill going on with the assessment backfilling for general fund, I would have to confess that in fact does happen and has happened. It's happened in the three legislative sessions that I've been chair of the agency and appeared before this subcommittee. Our budget structure hasn't changed a bit. The basic budget structure, the basic issue that the subcommittee is concerned about this time, is something that was in existence 2 years ago, 4 years ago, and 6 years ago when I was sitting in this chair.
Mr. Schuyler, so that I understand, basically what would have to happen or what is anticipated with regard to the board's request is that with regard to the policy option package 91-92, I guess it's really right. The carry forward of that special hearings officer position, but that hearings officer position, if that is filled as a hearings officer position, then what happens is that the assessment rate on state agencies goes from $1.35 to $1.63 per month per employee for state agencies. Is that your understanding?
Mr. Butler, that it is correct that if that administrative law judge position continues to be filled, it would require an increase in the assessment. It's also true, however, that the assessment has been something that has historically fluctuated, and it has fluctuated quite a bit. It was either, I believe it was 4 years ago, the agency voluntarily reduced the assessment from $1.54 or $1.57 a month down to $1.35, because we didn't feel that the rate of $1.54, whatever it was at that time, was warranted for continuation of the programs. This time, going in, looking at the other kind of increases in personnel costs that get rolled up to us as employees get stepped out, as salary increases are mandated for employees, that in order to continue the programs at their current level, then, which means continuing that particular administrative law judge, that would require an increase in the assessment. Decreasing the assessment, accepting the recommendation from the LFO and decreasing the assessment, or excuse me, not approving the requested increase in the assessment, means effectively that one administrative law judge will be eliminated at the beginning of the biennium. During the public hearing before, we did talk about the impact, to some degree. We talked about what the impact of that eliminating an ALJ, excuse me, an administrative law judge would be on the performance measures that we've got. It's going to extend the period of time it takes to get to a hearing. It's going to extend the period of time that a case is under the agency's control. It's going to extend the period of time that a dispute will continue to exist out there in a school district or a local government, city, county, or with the state.
And you had previously told us how much that extension of time would be without this additional employee.
Chair Butler, I believe that I made some estimates about that. If we drop down from three current ALJs down to two, it effectively doubles the amount of the length of time that it's going to take for a case to be processed.
So a 33% reduction in workforce generates a 50% increase, or 100% increase.
Well, Chair Butler, the reason for that has to do with the difficulties of scheduling. Most of the time, as I indicated in the previous public hearing, most of the difficulty in scheduling already that comes has to do with balancing the difficulties of scheduling hearings at the site and getting all the various people. I mean, in a typical hearing, there might be as many as 10 to 15 people whose calendars all kind of have to be lined up to get a hearing going.
If I recall, we could do some of that by telephone.
Some of it can be done by telephone. You're correct.
Representative Johnson?
You're proceeding along the exact questions I had. I was trying to quantify it, not doubling. Tell me how many days.
Chair Butler, Representative Johnson, I believe that the performance measures indicated now that what we try and do is get a case to hearing within 45 to 60 days before an administrative law judge.
Okay.
If we drop an administrative law judge, if we lay one off, that means it's probably going to be 90 to 120 days.
So 3 to 4 months to get a case before an administrative law judge.
Chair Butler, Representative Johnson, that's correct.
And at present, I beg your pardon, David, how many was it right now at present?
Chair Butler, our goal is to get them to hearing within 45 to 60 days.
But what is your actual experience right now?
Which of those are, right? 21.
Okay.
Chair Butler, it doesn't look like that our goals break out the specific, unless I'm not seeing it.
Mr. Chair,
within
the budget document, page 20, there is some actual data on the performance measures. I believe the agency is probably referencing measure 2, the average number of days between close of record and issuing of decision, and average number of days between oral argument and appeal for recommended decision of issuance of final order. Those are at 53 and 80 days, respectively, in 2001. I don't know where you are in 2002.
So the issuance of the final order right now is at 80, or in 19, or in 2001 was 80 days. Is that what you're reading on this?
That would be my read of the data that's there.
Chair Butler, the line above the average number of days between close of record and the issuance of a recommended decision would be the line that reflects the performance of the administrative law judges. It currently takes them 53, in 2001 it took them 53 days from the close of a hearing to issue their recommended decision.
Is that improved for 2002, do you know, Dave?
Chair Butler, I believe that the numbers for 2002 will show an incremental improvement. The numbers are probably going to be pretty close. What the measures that we've chosen don't reflect the specific question that we were talking about, which is how long it takes to get to a hearing in the first place.
Representative Johnson?
And just remind me again, I'm sorry that we've heard so many of these that my mind just kind of jumbled. What's the volume of cases that you're hearing?
Chair Butler, Representative Johnson, it varies to some degree, but overall we process between 200 and 300 cases of all types lumped together in a year.
Okay. I guess what I'm trying to get a sense of is we seem to be in this quagmire that is going to affect lots and lots of agencies in a period of declining resources, an inability to find revenues, and I think we have a certain menu of revenues here. We're excoriating agencies to do better performance, less counter fatigue, less people waiting in line. We're cutting resources to make them responsive. And where that equilibrium hits is the dilemma. I'm trying to get a sense for how much the increased time is going to be for what universe of people if we don't figure out a way to put some additional resources into this budget.
Chair Butler, Representative Johnson, it's somewhat difficult to quantify. I can tell you that each time that an administrative law judge goes out, they are going out to resolve a dispute.
Right.
And if they resolve that dispute, I mean, it avoids costs in other ways.
Oh, sure.
It avoids potentially a strike, which can be very expensive for both parties. It avoids the necessity of litigation in court, which can be very expensive. And when the process fails, and an example of that would be the nurses' strike at Oregon Health and Sciences University last year, it's a hugely expensive proposition. And so when we're successful, we save people money, but it's not always easy to put a dollar figure on how much we're saving. And there's really, it's difficult to know because you don't know what the result would have been for certain,
right,
if we're unsuccessful in doing what we do. We do know that that delay is not good for the process. There's, the longer a dispute goes on in a particular jurisdiction, the more that it affects morale, it affects productivity, it affects performance. So there are those kinds of costs, which are also difficult to kind of quantify. I appreciate
this is the subcommittee and the legislature in general has got very, very difficult decisions to try and balance out here. All I can say is that we can continue to produce a good product in terms of administering the various laws that we administer with the current staff, or we can reduce the staff by laying off an administrative law judge, and that will have an impact on how well we do the work. It will have an impact on how long it takes cases to be processed. It will have an impact on how long it takes representation elections to be held, and all of those things have spillover impacts.
A follow-up, I guess, to LFO, or the one other option is that we would look at the monthly assessment, if that's an option. And I see that LFO has recommended that we stick with the $1.35. But based on what the chair has just said, that assessment rate has fluctuated to reflect a variety of different circumstances. And I guess I'm interested in having a little tiny bit more discussion why the... I understand that there's a terminus to how much you can continue to assess agencies, but help me understand a little bit more what discussion went on with LFO's recommendation that the assessment rate stay the same.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, a bit about the process, as I understand it, in determining the rates. When budget development process kicks off, the agency will do an estimate of where they think their budget will be in the next budget cycle. They divide that by what they assume is a good number of positions that will be eligible to pay that rate and come down to a monthly rate. Yes, over time it has fluctuated, not only depending on the roll-up costs within the agency, but the estimated number of FTE that have been in the agency. So, yes, it has been 150s down to the 140s, down to the 130s, and now proposed to be back up to 160. In looking at LFO's recommendation and kind of finding the common threads through a lot of the budgets, a 21% rate increase seemed large and maybe warranted further discussion. The second part that went into that was the thought that continuing the Special Session 5 reductions and rolling those up into budgets. This is a continuation of that agency's Special Session 5 reduction, and there are general fund savings indirectly by taking that reduction to the assessment funded position. LFO is fully aware that it would require an elongation of the process, but that is the policy discussion I think that needed to come forward to say if you maintain the rate where it is today with the assumed number of FTE, this is what this agency looks like and the service level that you can anticipate. And if the will of the committee is to increase that rate at either the 21% or at some other rate, then we could pursue options on what would be the best way of adding back to the agency if the will of the subcommittee is to add an increase.
Monica, is some portion of that of this requested increase per employee also based upon the fact that we will have eliminated 800 positions of the 4-plus, nearly 5,000 vacancies? Is some of that also then a factor of the fact that positions have been eliminated, therefore the assessment rate per employee, that's per employee approved
right.
In the past, you'll have less employees approved?
Mr. Chair, that is true. The revenue from this agency and from this source has been volatile over time because we are doing the rate in advance of knowing how many positions will be authorized by the legislature. When LFO looked at the governor's proposed budget, our balanced budget, that is assuming, calculated out, roughly 38,000 positions would be subject to this assessment. As of, I think it was March, when we looked at the actuals, in this biennium, the agency has been collecting on average at about 34,000 positions. So there is some margin between what is in the GBB versus where they've been collecting today. So LFO has assumed 33,500 positions, which was the same number that was assumed when this biennium's FTE was calculated. That's a little bit lower than where they've been collecting on average in 2001-03. So there is a margin of error in there, assuming that there will be reductions at the very least to general fund and lottery fund staff. Other funds and federal funds will probably remain relatively constant on an agency-by-agency basis.
I do, and it's somewhat simplistic, so bear with me for just a second. We've sat in the same room and listened to the Department of Administrative Services talk about assessments. They are retroactive to make up for shortfall in terms of the charges for their mainframe processing. They seem at best kind of capricious. And we're agonizing over this rate with what's at risk being protracted strikes, acrimonious, fiscally damaging. I mean, I'm just trying to get a sense of what's the common policy thread that would allow DAS to come in and say, we didn't quite get it done, we're going to retroactively assess on all the common buildings that we maintain, versus working this number so hard.
I think some of the DAS assessments deal based upon the actual out-of-pocket costs by third parties, including utilities and consumption of repairs and those kinds of things, whereas this is an anticipated utilization, and it's not whether or not the power bill gets paid, it's whether or not these folks have access, all of the employees have access on a fairly rapid basis, and I'm not sure what a fairly rapid basis is because we haven't even completed the 2002 performance statistics, and I would like to have some kind of a feeling as to when those might get finished up. Do we know?
Chair Butler, I believe we could probably pretty close to being able to generate those now. There's always a little bit of uncertainty because where you're going to count things, because it's rare that cases finish up in one calendar year. But I believe that we have now the statistics that we would be able to fill in that column.
I'd like the 2002 to be filled in so that we know what the actual performance, because before I accept the LFO's recommendation that we approve the performance measures that have been submitted, I'd like 2002 to be submitted at that point. Rich, any package?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I had a question, I guess, in regard to the reduction option packages. And they gave us a list of reduction option packages. Monica, was there? I know we went to the hearings officer for the ALJ. We've taken everything above the ALJ, did the office specialist too.
Hey, Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, you're referring to the House Bill 3182 reductions on page 29 and 30 of the budget.
Correct.
Oh, let me see. Reduction option one, eliminating the space. Yes, that has been taken in, and that was in the governor's balanced budget.
Okay.
Reduction option two, reducing services supplies, staff training, maintenance office expenses, that was also incorporated in the governor's balance budget.
Okay.
Number three, again, more travel, also in the governor's budget.
Okay.
Number four, office specialist for providing transcripts, yes, that was also in package 090.
Okay. So we're down to option number five.
We're down to five and six.
Okay. And I guess I go back and forth on this one, Mr. Chair, on the elimination of the hearings officer person. The hearings officer. I think you can look at it two ways. You can look at it that maybe not having a hearings officer knowing that the cases won't resolve quickly, maybe brings both parties to the bargaining table ahead of time. knowing that they're going to have a prolonged period of time in order to hear their case since 92 or 93% of the cases settle anyway. Maybe that's not such a bad thing.
Conversely, you could drive them to the courthouse.
So I guess I go back and forth. I'm happy to support this, you know, but I would like in the discussion, should we move this today, that at least as part of the budget report, to say that they should come back to the e-board, should they have an increase in case filings, so that we can deal with this in light of all the collective bargaining issues we deal with this session. And maybe that's a way to help resolve where we're going and try and take some middle ground.
I think I would like to add, amongst the statistics that are provided, the actual number of cases that are opened on an annual basis. It's kind of loosey-goosey between 200 and 300 cases a year. That's a 50% spread, and I'd kind of like to know for 99, 2000, 2001, 2002, the actual number of opened cases that were opened there. If we've got 97% of them successfully closed without strike or other issues, then we'd know exactly how many that meant.
Chairman Butler, the just to clear some potential confusion up there, the percentages that are resolved prior to strike or prior to interest arbitration, those two lines, that would be number 5 and number 6, they're on page 20 mm-hmm. in the performance manager. Those two lines reflect the performance of the conciliation service. Those two lines talk about how well the mediators are doing in resolving collective bargaining disputes. The preceding lines, 1, 2, 3, and 4, those deal with the board's adjudicatory functions, how well the board is doing in processing unfair labor practice cases, union representation cases, unit clarification cases, state personnel relations appeal cases, and other kinds of contested case hearings from beginning to end. We have two really distinct but complementary functions, the adjudicatory part and the mediation and conciliation part. And so the measures there in terms of how many in 5 and 6, how many cases, what percentage of cases that are resolved prior to strike, that reflects how well the mediators are doing in getting the parties to come to a voluntary agreement in collective bargaining negotiations, whereas the numbers of the percentage of how long a case is in front of the board, that refers to cases that are part of our contested case procedure.
Okay.
And it would be relatively simple for us to provide you with the total number of cases. I do have...
For 99, it was 359.
In 1999, which is something that Member Thomas brought with her, we had 359 cases managed by the board.
Those were opened that year, that's just managed cases?
Yeah, cases that were open at some period, point in time during
1999. Yes. And 2000, 2001?
I don't have those figures with.
For St. Patrick.
But my question is, if there are 359 files open, when you say percentage of collective bargaining disputes, are those files that are opened, is that part of that 359 or not?
Chair Butler, Representative Patridge, yes, that would be, those would be cases that would fit into that 359.
Well, I guess my question is, if you're resolving 97% of those cases, that means that you only have, say you're resolving 97%, that's 3, 6, 9,
10 cases.
9, 11 or 12 cases. So that's what I'm trying to, your performance measures don't give me a good indication of what you're doing.
10.77 cases.
Yeah, right. And I know you're doing more than that many cases. So,
Chair Butler, Representative Patridge, I think it goes back to what I was trying to explain to the chair a minute ago about the difference between the mediation function and the adjudicatory function. That I don't know what of the 359 cases in 1999, for example, I don't know what percentage of that 359 were cases that were in front of mediation.
if we assume that maybe that was, just for the sake of discussion, say that was a third of the 359 cases, then 97% of that third would be cases that would be resolved without a strike, for example.
Now, I'm not a lawyer, Mr. Steidler, but wouldn't it be important to know the difference between the mediation versus the adjudicatory cases in any, for budget purposes?
Chair Butler, we do keep track of that. In 1999, there were 229 cases that fall within our, of the 359, 229 of them were contested case proceedings. 92 contract collective bargaining mediations, 24 grievance mediations, and 14 trainings that make up that number.
Representative Patridge?
So I guess I'm trying to get the difference. Do all your cases have mediation before they come to you or not?
Chair Butler, Representative Patridge, no. The mediation function deals primarily with the collective bargaining process, the negotiations process, and where parties go through collective bargaining and are unable to arrive at an agreement, they can request mediation. We will provide a mediator. The mediator will try to help them resolve their collective bargaining contract without going to a strike or interest arbitration. That's sort of one function. We can, the other function, the contested case function, where one party alleges that the other party has violated some specific provision of the Collective Bargaining Act, or where an individual employee alleges that their rights under the state personnel relations law were violated, we conduct contested case hearings in those proceedings. We can provide mediation in those cases if the parties request it. As a practical matter, very often the parties do not. We have no way to force them to go through the mediation process. And frankly, given the fact that we have only three mediators who are usually pretty busy doing contract mediations, we would be hard-pressed to deal with many more requests for mediation than we get without keeping up the mediation staff. The mediators are not spending time sitting around twiddling their thumbs. They're very busy.
So I guess my question is, on the contested case here, if we made it mandatory that you mediate, can you do it for a much lower cost to mediate those things initially before they have a contested case here?
Chair Butler, Representative Patridge, if we have the mediation staff to mediate ULP, unfair labor practice, and grievances that came before us, I'm guessing that given the track record of our current mediation staff, that they would achieve a settlement without further litigation in some number, and maybe a quarter, maybe a third, maybe higher, I don't really know, but they would achieve settlement without further litigation in some part of those contested case proceedings. Mediation is a very effective process when the parties enter into it with a willingness to resolve their dispute without litigation.
So do we have BOLI or unemployment department numbers? I mean, how does this compare up? Do you have any idea?
I don't personally. BOLI is over in transportation and economic development. Do we know how this compares to BOLI's mediation?
Mr. Chair, I cannot. We can check with the other LFO analysts.
I had one other concern relative to employee vacancy and positions issues, and that was the seven-step pay increase that
moving the office specialist to, who is a receptionist, to the executive assistant, office manager three, a 20%+ pay raise. And I do have a question about that. That position is now filled with an internal candidate. But was that office specialist two working that far out of class, had that rather significant management and executive skills, and had continued to work there under that capacity, and then after this many months then filled that vacant position?
Chair Butler, I believe I'll let Member Thomas address this issue, if it's okay with you, because the decision to fill the position was hers.
Okay.
Okay, Chair Butler, members of the committee, I'd actually written something up, but I'll just be real direct on that answer. In February, the governor's office told me that I was going to be appointed chair. We're losing two board members. This is sort of an extraordinary time for the board. We usually, they're staged, and I'll be stepping into the board chair position and helping train two brand new board members. To answer your direct question, yes, Tony Cotell had taken on a significant number of work duties over, not just since Esther Forrest left last July, but since Marjorie Guest left 2 years ago. She was our systems computer analyst person, who'd been there for 20 years. And we have sort of a coddled together, patched together computer system that our constituents rely on for a huge amount of information to communicate with us. Tony went to training, took on all of those duties essentially for that position, and was never upgraded in that work. Took over a significant amount of the work that Esther Forrest left behind, and Esther had been a long-term employee with us for 24 years. Again, Tony got a little bit of an out-of-pay step increase, but nothing significant to cover. When I was told that I was going to be taking over as chair, and having watched Chair Steitler carry the burden of trying to do this administrative work and be board chair with all the legal duties, I said to Margaret Halleck immediately, I have got to get that position filled. And, you know, her comment initially was, this should be more like the Workers' Compensation Board. We really need an administrative position. And my response was, we don't have the money. We just don't. The Workers' Compensation Board actually has like a $60,000, $70,000 position that manages the board operations. We're smaller, but my feeling was that we had to get the position filled. Tony was the ideal internal candidate. She was actually looking at other positions. She was the lowest seniority person in our agency. She's been there for 7 years, but a significant amount of work experience in managing offices. She's in her mid-50s, well, 53 when we appointed her. But I made the decision, given what's been going on with the budget and all of the duties that she had taken on, that she should be paid commensurate with what I felt she was already doing. And so made the executive appointment into that position. And she's an incredible, incredible worker. The workload she carries is phenomenal. And I wouldn't go back on my decision if it was a good one for the state.
Senator Winter?
Just a question, because I'm looking. Your caseload or your number of activity reduced so dramatically? I'm looking at you're coming from an FTE, a position of 18 down to 12.
Chair Butler, Senator Winters, no, our caseload hasn't diminished that significantly. We've been able to deal with a caseload that has remained relatively constant since 1995. Largely by increased efficiencies, and that increased efficiencies has to do with, there's sometimes, I guess you could say, mixed efficiencies. Where when I went to work there in 1992, there were five administrative law judges, excuse me, and each administrative law judge had their own office specialist, too, hearings reporter, who traveled with them to hearings, recorded the hearings, typed their transcripts, put their orders into final form, and all the rest of that kind of support work. Now the administrative law judges do all that work themselves. They record their own hearings. We don't really provide that many transcripts anymore, because we only transcribe those cases that are likely to be appealed to the court. And the administrative law judges are responsible. They're responsible for doing their own typing, producing their own orders, basically. And we have one office specialist left who works for all three administrative law judges to sort of put them in final form. But it's up to the administrative law judges to do most of that kind of work. That reduction in personnel and the additional duties that the administrative law judges have taken on, coupled with improvements to our computer system, while it's not a model of a cutting-edge technology, it's so far more sophisticated than it was 10 years ago that it's allowed us to do a lot more by computer than we were able to do in the old-fashioned days when everything was done by typewriter. And so those kinds of improvements have allowed us to continue providing with the same basic caseload, even though the staff has been going down.
Follow-up, Senator Roberts?
I guess one of the concerns I would have, and I can certainly applaud the efficiencies that you've been able to move from 18 to 12, but my question would be, in that movement, are you able to do, looking at timeline to process, are you able to keep up with that timeline so that you're not actually keeping issues on the table much longer than what they should be?
Chair Butler, Senator Winters, I guess it's my belief that if the LFO recommendations are adopted and we lose an administrative law judge position, the timelines will suffer. And the receptionist position. I mean, the positions that the LFO has targeted for elimination.
From a cost standpoint, you know, looking at it from a cost, if your timeline is lengthened out before, doesn't it cost us more if your cases are strung out a little longer time? And I guess the optimum is to try to see how rapidly you can get cases in and get them closed, and so that we don't go to mediation and some of those other issues, which ends up to be costly. I'm just trying to get my arms around this.
Chair Butler, Senator Winters, I believe that's correct. I mean, one of the reasons administrative courts, such as the Employment Relations Board, were established is to provide a relatively speedy way to adjudicate these kinds of disputes without cluttering up the court system, without taking an undue amount of time, and getting rid of these cases or processing these cases in a way that's far less costly than going through the kind of litigation that would occur if these matters were ending up in circuit court.
May I just also respond to
your question? Please,
Senator Wells. My colleague mentioned the OHSU strike last year. And just to highlight a little bit about what goes on at the board, that was a situation where mediation was not successful. But that strike cost the state and the taxpayers of Oregon millions and millions and millions of dollars. And just to let you know, the position, for instance, the receptionist position, which we call the receptionist position at the board, that position really isn't just a receptionist position. We had the media in our front office and downstairs almost every day of that strike. And that position represented the governor and the legislature often in interfacing with that media in a way that well represented the integrity of the process that you set up here at the board. And does a lot of the other legal stuff. But in terms of cost, I would say, Senator Winters, yes, that when we're successful, no one knows. It's when we're not successful, they know, because it costs a lot of money.
Follow up, Representative
Mr. Chair, that poses some concern, because if you want the agency to be efficient, which we do, and if you want us to, in order to avoid more expensive costs, which we do, I'm just looking at the prudency of what this position brings to the table. And why the recommendation was not to, and I see the LFO's discussion on this, and I know that we're taking vacancies, and I know that's part of my charge, but I also know that we don't need to do something that would cause an increase in cost later, or an increase where we're actually talking about more of these cases are going into mediation. So I just have to put that on the table as one of my concerns. I don't want us to end up paying more, being penny wise and pound foolish.
for St. Patrick's.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I was trying to look at the mediation piece, too, as well. I had a question, and then I have a comment. I was trying to look at the PICS report, Monica, in the back. Can you tell me, we're paying a hearings officer and a mediator the same thing, and they're the same. I don't know what the difference between a C-1541 and a C-1542 is. Can somebody enlighten me a little bit, or Satish or somebody? I'm just looking at the classification.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, I believe there is a one range difference between those positions, but we'd have to confirm that. I think the average rates there that you see are
so
the
So is a 42 higher than a 41 or lower than a 42?
The lower, I believe the mediators are lower positions.
Something you probably have to think about with administrative services. The mediator position, the average rate is $5,681 per month, and the hearings officer is $5,956. So the hearings officer is higher.
Okay.
Yes.
My next question, I mean, it's we're at a place now where we've been kicking around this hearings officer thing for 30 minutes, so we either have to, in my opinion, make a decision or not of what we're going to do on the hearings officer. I think it's a lot of speculation as to what we're going to do in terms of either, one, is it going to increase the number of days, or two, I made the contrary argument before that it increases pressure to mediate and resolve these disputes before a hearings officer panel if you're extending that time. So, I guess if this is the only thing we're high-centered on, Mr. Chair, respectfully, I don't know how much else we can continue to exhaust on this particular piece, but I don't know where we're going to go. I would suggest that maybe we go with the LFO recommendation and ask them to come back to us and see if it's actually backing up. We can always add.
Let me thank you very much, Representative Patridge. This has been a thoughtful discussion.
And I have Johnson.
Representative Johnson?
Well, you also had offered the suggestion that maybe we not go with the LFO, or at least I thought I understood you to say not go with the LFO and have them come back and report to the emergency board.
Well, go with the LFO.
Go with the LFO and report back with the number of filings that they're having comparatively.
Which would not have that additional hearings officer funded. And so the assessment rate would be at the $1.35 as opposed to the $1.63. And then report if the workload was and that's let me see if I can put just a tiny bit different spin, Senator. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The only thing I wanted to add to Representative Patridge's comment was that it appeared to me that we had we only really had one other choice to make too, and that was we're obviously not going to dedicate more general funds to this department. And so the only real choice is, if we want to keep the third position, is to increase the rate. I mean, that's basically it. We either increase the rate or we don't keep the third position. So.
Well, and that's and of course, when we increase the rate, we increase the general fund consumption as a result of the fact
right.
that the rate is spread to the general fund. I think there are five issues that I've delineated here. If I could just go over those. First of all, I would like to have an amplification of the performance measures, and those need to be updated. Before I'll accept the recommendation number one relative to the review that we approve those, I would like to have the 2002 completed relative to the existing performance measurements. And then also the cases that were all cases that were open during each of the individual years. I don't know that that's a very difficult position or difficult number to come up with. Number two, I am concerned about whether or not the revenues are unrealistic, the revenue projections. We need to get some realism as to those revenue projections relative to local governments and other funds. This reliance upon a 25% increase in other funds over 1999-01 level, that greater level of expectations, I don't know is very realistic. So I want to have some response as the realism of that. And then with regard to Senator Devlin's comment, is the 135 rate per employee versus the 163, a 28-cent increase on the 33,500 employee assessment, a 21% overall increase, is that realistic in that process? And I think that's just something that we'll have to come up with. And then the last two items that I have here is that it really goes back to the budget note, and that is that we need to really make certain that, that between DAS and LFO that we develop a funding mechanism that is consistent, in fact, with the workload of each program. Again, that's something that I don't know that we've got a good handle on. We come back to the beginning. And also, we need some DAS recommendations on the staffing, the appropriate classified and internal relationships, and whether or not those are appropriate, and that would be as part of a budget note. I do agree with that. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it your intention to try to get some of this information before we move on this budget, and you'd put it over until first thing tomorrow?
I think if we could go ahead and put it over to the first thing tomorrow, that would be the appropriate. If the agency feels like they can come back up with the performance, the amplified performance information, the realization of these realistic or unrealistic projections, and then if we all come back agreeing that 21% assessment increase in order to keep the performance measures in check, and I don't know whether they're in check or not, looking at only one complete year being 2001 of actual data versus the targets. So those are, and I think the current proposed budget note basically mirrors my concerns for number 04 and 05. So, Representative Patrick, you have
a second. Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to, if they're going to come back tomorrow, I'd like to relook at these performance measures and write them in English instead. I mean, I don't know what average number of days to process all union representation-related petitions. We have contested case hearing. We have all these different types, and it doesn't really. Yeah. There's not a common definition.
The mediation versus the adjudicatory is a concern.
I guess that's. I just like to tighten those up to make sure we know what we're looking at when you guys give us the information, and when you say 359 versus 229, you know, I want to be looking at apples and oranges next time.
Trying to give you a graph.
Well, I don't need a graph. You need to tighten up the language. I mean, what I'd like you to do is go back and look at those or talk to Jeff.
And then make them correct, if you would, please.
So we know what exactly you're saying on the performance measure.
Are there other observations? This gives you a list of things to do, and what we'll do, what the chair's intention is to go ahead and carry this hearing over to the work session and come back for a work session and finish it up tomorrow, either based upon the recommendations of the fiscal or based upon with some concern that we come back to the e-board if your number of contested case hearings continues to increase and the time period increases, or that we go ahead and modify the recommendation of legislative fiscal to incorporate now that that mediator, and then with a subsequent appearance before the emergency board to give us a report as to the satisfactory work that's being done without the prolonged hearings time. Was there a comment, Representative Patridge?
Mr. Chair, I wanted to also see what other hearings officers are handling in terms of their caseloads. I'd be interested in what they're able to do at Boley and maybe the employment department, as well as what the hearings officer panels are for similarly situated cases. I imagine that these are probably, some of them are much more complex, but some of them are pretty similar. And I think a lot of them are individuals that are more along the lines of the unemployment insurance cases
maybe
and some of those kinds of things.
Monica, check with the Boley.
Mm-hmm. If Monica can work with the Employment Relations Board to get maybe a good flavor for what kind of, you know, what their caseload mix is. I'm just interested to know
you know, how quickly other people are doing it too.
Colleagues, we're in work session, but I would like the members, the council chair, if we're moving in the wrong direction, if you feel that we're moving at quantum speed in the wrong direction, that the chair's current position is that I would like them to come back tomorrow. We'll recess this work session until tomorrow morning at 8:30, at which time we'll get the updated performance measurements amplified, some discussion about this these other funds, local governments and other funds, increase that reliance upon the increase of the 25%, whether we still feel like that's really realistic, and then the increase in the potential increase in the assessment rate from 135 to 163. With that, I don't see anyone wildly saying that this is probably the wrong direction for us to go. Any of you that have any angst or concerns about this, if you'd like to consult with me privately afterwards, I'd be happy to do that. With that, Representative Patrick's recognition.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to say we may want to, are we in the, I don't know what our notification mode is. We may just want to.
We can carry over.
Carry
yeah.
out the work session.
And what we would do is just, we won't close it. We will just carry it over until tomorrow. Are there any objections? Hearing and seeing none, this work session will carry over at 8:30 until 8:30 tomorrow morning. So we're just going to go ahead and recess this and carry it over until tomorrow morning. Thank you very much.